Well, let's get into our message for today. We're doing a four-part series on rebellion. It's not the greatest, most uplifting of titles, but really, when we came up with this idea of doing this series on rebellion, we wanted to share the gospel message from the other end. You know, basically, it comes down to this. The root problem of the human condition is the brokenness we have inflicted on ourselves. All the stuff that's messed up in the world, all the political stuff, ecological stuff, all the financial issues going on, all the relational issues that are happening, whether it's at an individual level, family level, state level, all the way up to nation states, you know, posturing for war or actively engaged in conflict. All that is we've inflicted on ourselves. The root problem of the human condition is that we have rebelled against God. That's what we did. God made everything good and perfect, and we broke it all. And so, that's what we've done. But there's good news. But to know the good news, we need to have the correct diagnosis of the problem. I've used this analogy before. When you go to the doctor, and you want them to tell you what the problem is, so then you can start to come up with the solution. Because if we think the problem is I haven't got enough money, or we think the problem is I'm not good looking enough, or we think the problem is I don't have enough networks or relationships, or I don't have a husband, I don't have a wife, that's why I'm not happy. That's why I have all of this existential angst in my life, and I'm not happy because I haven't got these certain things. Well, actually, you're not happy because you're in rebellion against the sovereign ruler of the universe. That's actually the root problem. And so, obviously, we can meet other people's, you know, felt needs. If there's a felt need of hunger, of course, we need to feed people. If there's a felt need of there's a lack of shelter or lack of clothes, whatever. You know, we need to connect with people at where they're at, but we want to do that to get to the root problem. And that is, we want to show them that they are in conflict with the creator of the universe, and life is so much better, so much more harmony, so much more synergy when we are actually walking with Jesus, the true human, the true king who rules the universe right now. If we're not in rebellion against him, but rather in faithful allegiance to him, then it doesn't matter if I haven't got the money or the husband or the wife or the... You know, it doesn't matter if I don't have that husband, right? You know, it's a little joke. You know. God himself made everything perfect. God made it good, and we, the humans, broken. And the first session that we looked at, Pastor Jay talked about the angelic rebellion. The angels, they rebelled first. But what's interesting, and last time that I preached about this 2 weeks ago, we looked at the first human rebellion, Adam and Eve. And what's interesting to me is that angels, they rebelled and they cast down and all that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden a serpent appears in the garden, God's good creation, and then the humans rebel. But it's only the human rebellion that broke the world. It's only the human rebellion that broke the universe. When Satan rebelled against God, when pride was found in him and said, I will ascend to the throne and I will be like God and I will receive worship rather than giving worship to God, Satan's rebellion, the angelic rebellion, didn't break the world. It was only when Adam and Eve decided that they wanted to be like God that everything got messed up and that we live in the world that we have now, where there is a discordant tune played throughout the symphony of creation. It's just like there's something jarring about it. You know, mosquitoes bite us and attack us. There's, from those little things all the way up to, you know, natural disasters. That's because we broke things. And why is it that when we rebelled against God, not Satan, why is it that the human rebellion broke creation and not the angelic rebellion? It's because we're made in the image of God. That's how powerful the image of God is. We were created in his image, and we were the ones that were made to represent him. We were the ones who were made to be his image bearers, so that when the rest of creation looked at us, they would see God in us. We're the ones that were meant to represent God to the rest of creation and to go throughout all of creation and to cultivate it, to steward it, to look after it, to grow glory for God from creation. And we rejected that. Because we have the image of God, when we rebelled against God, we broke everything. So the first humans rebelled and everything became corrupted. And ever since, humans have gotten better and better at rebelling against God. If you read through Genesis after the fall in, or the rebellion in Genesis chapter 3, you have like genealogies and you have certain characters come out. There's a man named Lamech who boasts about killing people. And then he has a son called Nimrod who boasts about killing even more people. And they're getting better and better at rebelling against God. So much so that Genesis 5, 6, or 7 talks about the flood. What God does is he undoes creation and hits the reset button. He undoes creation and he starts a new creation. So in the beginning, in Genesis chapter 1, the earth is covered with waters. Is that right? The waters cover the earth and the world was formless and it was void, it was empty. And so there's this sense of it just having waters covering the earth and it's chaotic. In the Jewish mindset, the Hebrew mindset, the waters represent chaos. And so God undoes creation by, what's he do? He brings the waters back. And so he kind of reverses everything back to Genesis 1, hits the reset button, and he even sends out his breath again. In Genesis chapter 1, it talks about how the breath of God, the Spirit of God hovered above the waters. In Genesis chapter 7, he sends out a wind. It's the same word, wind, spirit, ruach. He recreates. So what is done in Genesis 1 is redone when God takes away the flood waters. He hits the reset button. He goes through a process of uncreation to recreation to all in the effort to deal with human rebellion. That's a lot of work, right? A lot of work to undo what is deeply inside of us. And did it work? No way. It takes even more work than uncreating and recreating to deal with the rebellion of the image bearers of God. But he does all of that to show us how corrupt we are, how fallen we have become. There's so much rebellion. We get better and better at rebelling against God that God hits the reset button, but it doesn't make a difference. And it brings us to the Tower of Babel. So let's have a... This is Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So we've all heard of this story. If you're a Christian, if you've grown up in church, you would have heard of this story. You would have heard it's a common Sunday school lesson about the Tower of Babel, and you draw towers and little people on it, and we learn about it. This is where languages come from. That's what we're taught, and maybe you've heard it preached about quite a lot, even in the Sunday service. Not kids' church, but a pastor might have got up and talked about Genesis 11 and talked about the power of unity. Often Genesis 11 is used as a passage for Vision Sundays. You know, we had a Vision Sunday and Mike would say, if we all speak the same language, if we all speak the same language, then we can do anything. You know, and these guys were all speaking the same language. They were building a tower to all the way up into heaven, and God himself had to come down to stop them, and he had to confuse their language, and that's what Genesis 11 is all about. If we all speak the same language, we all talk about life groups and life together, and we're all on the same page. And because of that unity, then we can do whatever. We can do anything. God himself says we can do anything. But Genesis 11 really isn't about unity. Sorry to say. God himself, we can say God himself says that they can do anything. I mean, it says that in there. God himself does say it. And unity is powerful. But it's actually about deep rebellion, the Genesis chapter 11 is about deep rebellion. It's one of the most outrageous defiances that humanity has thrown up their fist to God, saying, we will not do what you've told us to do. The unity is just a byproduct of the deep corruption that's in all of humanity, that they were all unified together in rebellion against God. So, unity is powerful, but there's deep rebellion here, and I want to show you how God undoes that rebellion. So it's not, you know, it's, like I said before, this is really about the gospel. We're really just talking about the problem so we can talk about the good news. And just like we talked about the fall in the garden, where humans wanted to be like God, and how God undid that. One Adam sinned in the first garden. A second Adam rejected temptation in the Garden of Gethsemane. What was started in the garden was undone in another garden. What was started at Babel is undone somewhere else. And we'll get there. I mean, you can probably think about it already. But why is this deep rebellion? Why? I mean, come on, Ken. Isn't this really about unity? Where's the rebellion in wanting to build a tower? You know, Derek's learning to be an urban planner. They're building a city. So this is the first mention of urban planning in the Bible. You know, some of you guys are probably maybe even built towers. You've built little structures and you thought, wow, this is my thing that I love. And, you know, it's okay to build stuff, right? So where's the rebellion, Ken? Well, humans were created to fill the earth. Genesis chapter 1, we were created. Go forth and multiply. Fill the earth. Have dominion over it. That's the first words God speaks to us. Go and fill the earth. Don't get comfortable and stay in one place. Don't all congregate together and feel good about yourselves and build a city where you can stay in one place and just remain. You know, the fear of the humans, at the builders of Babel, the fear of the builders of Babel was that they would be scattered. They didn't want to fulfill God's mission. God had told human beings, it is part of your mandate. I've given you my image so that you can go through all of creation. You know, maybe if the fall never happened, and maybe this is part of what we see in the new creation, we're called to go to the stars, right? We're supposed to fill all of creation. Maybe we're meant to terraform planets. Maybe we're meant to build ring worlds. Maybe we're meant to build Dyson spheres and all this kind of stuff. Maybe. I mean, what are we going to be doing for eternity, right? Who wants to join me in a ring world project? Yeah. Okay, come on, let's do this. But we were meant to go and fill creation, to represent God all throughout it. And here, deep rebellion. No, God, I will not go. I will stay right here. And you can't move me. Oh, my kids say that to me. That's when I know Dad needs to spring into action. What else did they do? Oh, broken. That's from last week. Humans were created to represent God. So it's not really formatted correctly. That should be. So represent, we're meant to represent him. We carry his image so that we present God again wherever we go. I present God again to you now. You know, in your workplace, on the campus, with your family members, wherever you are, it's coming up to springtime. Well, springtime, I'm going to be planting my garden. I'm going to be representing God to my garden bed. As I'm planting those tomatoes, as I got my hand in the dirt, just like the first gardener, Adam, I am representing God. I'm saying, tomatoes, you will be fruitful because I represent God to you. I'm speaking God's words to you right now. And beans, you're going to be the best, the freshest. And pests, you better listen to me because this is my garden. And you need to listen because I represent God to creation. That's what we're meant to do. We're meant to represent God to creation. We're not meant to present ourselves. Whose name did the tower builders want to make great at the Tower of Babel? Themselves. Let us make a great name for ourselves. It says it right there in the text. Let us make a name for ourselves. Wow. You know, I tell my kids, as the father of my family, I take very seriously my role of bringing identity. I say, we are Johnstons and we serve and encourage. That's our role. That's what we do. And it'd be like one of my kids saying to me, no, Dad, I don't serve and encourage. I will be served and I will discourage people. That's what I'm going to do. Oh, really? That's what you're going to do? Well, when you're 18, maybe you can do that, but right now you will serve and encourage. It's like almost exactly the opposite. They were told to, that as human beings, we're image bearers of God. The mandate is to represent God to all of creation. And they said, no, we won't do that. We will present ourselves to creation. We don't want to be here on earth. We want to storm the gates of heaven. We'll build a tower right up into heaven, and God will have to acknowledge that we are greater than he is. Humans were created to represent God. Humans were to use cultural development for God's glory. This is maybe stretching things a little bit. So test it, see if it's good. You know, when anyone's talking to you, whether it's on, you know, a podcast or YouTube or me, you know, chew up the meat, eat it, swallow the meat, spit out the bones. This one might be a bone, maybe, we'll see. But, you know, there's a line there in Genesis chapter 1. It talks about how they, and it's interesting to me why it's there in the first place. It talks about how they use bricks and tar instead of stone and mortar. Why is that there? So when I see stuff like that, I ask myself a question, why is that there? Well, if you look at earlier in Genesis, it talks about all the different cultural developments that are going on. There's the iron workers, there's the musicians, there's the people who start to herd and look after animals like sheep and things like that. So there's all these different kind of acknowledgements of human cultural development. Then it comes to the tower builders, the people rebelling at Babel, and it says that they use brick and tar instead of stone and mortar. So there's some kind of sense of cultural development. They're moving forward in their building technology, right? Cultural development, technological development. And what do they use it? What do they use it for? They use it to shake their fist at God. No, we will stay right here and go nowhere else. No, we will not represent you. We will present ourselves. We will use the image of God that you've given us to cultivate the entire universe. We will use it to defy you. And doesn't that happen today? Oh, who thinks the internet is a great thing, right? Some of you on it right now. So the internet is a great thing, right? What's the internet mostly used for? Pornography, right? So the internet is a great technological advancement, and we use it for something that's actually shaking our fists and being defiant to God. All the different technological developments, how have they been used? Now, obviously, technology can be and should be, and that's why we talk about wanting to raise up Christians who understand what it means to represent God, so that in your technological field, that you can use cultural advancement and development for the glory of God instead of the corrupt and rebellious nature of humans. So that's why Genesis chapter 11 isn't really about unity. It just happens to be a byproduct of deep corruption and rebellion. And that's the bad news. Ken, you said there'll be good news. Okay, let's see. Oh, here's some good news. All our rebellion is easily dealt with by God. No, here we are. It's all of humanity. In all of their unity, they come together. All of their technological building advancements using bricks and tar instead of stone and mortar. And they're building a city, a tower and a city together to storm the gates of heaven and say, we won't be scattered. We're going to make a name for ourselves. And God just comes down there and says, no. No, that's not going to happen. And he does something incredible. He punishes, but he also is gracious, so, so gracious. And he gives us the languages and the multicultural diversity that the world sees today. You know, one of the reasons why I love... So even in his kind of dismissal of our rebellion, nope, you're not going to do that, he also furthers his plan and advances. You know, we were always meant to be multicultural and diverse. And he uses Babel to bless us with the gift of the nations. And here we are in Melbourne, one of the most multicultural cities in the world. I love it. Here we are. We have people from all around the world here. And it's awesome. So all of our rebellion is easily dealt with by God. He even turns our rebellion to his purposes. He created the nations. The builders, they wanted to be the same as God. That were the builders, they wanted to be, their rebellion was, we don't want to change. We're comfortable. Who knows that multicultural societies can be uncomfortable at times? Who knows that cross-cultural communication can be difficult at times? I even alluded to this last week. I mean, I didn't allude to it. I explicitly said it last week. Cross-cultural communication can make offense easier, but it's also an opportunity that we talk through the offense and our relationship becomes stronger. The builders wanted the safety and comfortableness of familiarity. Does that sound like anyone you know? Sounds like me sometimes. Sometimes Kira says, Ken, we're doing this. I go, what? I had planned to stay at home on Saturday. You want me to go and visit someone? And I just get agitated because it's an unexpected plan and it's outside my comfort zone. The builders wanted to be the same and they wanted things to stay the same and to never change. But God wanted creation filled with diversity, so he creates the nations. And here we are. We called every nation. Called to the nations. Maybe, Lloyd, do you mind jumping up? Just a quick sermon today as everyone breathes a sigh of relief. I have an AGM coming up, which we'll go through. But all of our rebellion is easily dealt with by God. Let me ask you this question. Are we like the builders? Well, we are, because we're human. But are we acting like the builders right now? Individually, are you like, do you value staying the same and presenting yourself rather than God? Do you value using human cultural and technological advancement for your own means instead of for God's? Which do you prioritize? Are we like the builders, staying with what's familiar, not wanting to fulfill the mission God has for us? I mean, ultimately, that's what the rebellion was that they didn't want to fulfill the mission that God had for them. Fill the earth, represent me, cultivate glory for me in all that you do. In your cultural and technological advancements, cultivate glory for me. That's what the image bearers do. That's what we do. We're the hinge point between God and the rest of creation. We represent God to the rest of creation. And then from the rest of creation, we cultivate. That's what gardeners do. That's why Adam was a gardener. Gardeners cultivate things. And we can cultivate things in finance. We can cultivate things in education. We can cultivate things in engineering, in being a stay-at-home mum and raising kids. We can cultivate glory for God from the rest of creation in whatever we do. We're all gardeners of some sort, aren't we? We all garden somehow. We're all involved in the mission of God somehow. And so we represent God, but we cultivate glory for God from the rest of creation. And then as priests before him, we take it and we give it to him. God, here's the glory I've grown for you today in the garden that you've given me at Melbourne University, with my neighbours, with the athletic gifts that you've given me, with the musical gifts that you've given me. This is the glory I've grown for you and I'm giving it to you, God. That's the mission we have, and the builders at Babel rebelled against it. We have the same mission and we are liable at times to fall into the trap of being like the people at Babel. That's why we need each other, to remind each other to not do that. So, are we like the builders, staying with what's familiar, not wanting to fulfill the mission God has for us? Probably, at times, yeah. Individually and even as a church, yes. So what's the answer? Just like God undid the human rebellion in the garden with a human's obedience in another garden, Jesus, fully human, fully God, just like what was undone in the garden, God had an answer for that. God had an answer for what happened in the garden. He has an answer for what happened at Babel. You know, it's amazing. The very next chapter, chapter 12, a man is chosen. His name's Abram. And God says, I'm going to make you a blessing to the nations. I will bless you and the nations of the world will be blessed through you. God has an answer. Later on, a man, a descendant of Abraham would come. His name is Jesus. Not only man, but fully God. And what he does is he sends his Spirit to the world. Where else do we see the nations and the confusion of languages? In the Bible. The Pentecost. How is Babel undone? Well, it's ultimately undone, primarily undone through what Jesus does, but Jesus sends his Spirit. And at Pentecost, God's Spirit, the Spirit of Jesus, is poured out on God's people. See, at Babel, there was unity in rebellion that led to disunity in languages. But at Pentecost, there was unity in allegiance to Jesus and obedience that led to diverse languages being unified. It's being reversed. It's being undone. At Babel, there was a scattering of disobedient humans to fulfill the original mandate, fill the earth. At Pentecost, there was an empowering of obedient humans, not just a scattering, an empowering of obedient humans to fulfill the old and new mandate, make disciples of the nations. At Babel, there was the building of a building and a scattering of a people. At Pentecost, there was a building of a people with the scattering of a building. What do I mean by that? We're the building right now. We're actually the building. And we are sent through to all the corners of the earth. Jesus said, you'll be my disciples, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. We're pretty far from Jerusalem right now, aren't we? And even in this room, as far away as we are from Jerusalem, we have the nations in this room. And there's, you know what? There are 200 languages in this city. 200 languages. And God calls us to represent Him to those nations in this city. At Babel, there was a building of a building and then a scattering of a people. At Pentecost, there was a building of a people with the scattering of a building, the church. So, are we like the builders of Babel at times? You know, if you're not a Christian, you're exactly like the builders of Babel. Making a name for yourself might not be a great name, it might be an awesome name. But you're making a name for yourself and you're not fulfilling the mission that God has for you if you're not a Christian. But that can change today. If you say, Jesus, I want you to be my king and I'll follow you and I'll make your name great, not my own. Are we like the builders of Babel at times? If you're not a Christian, you're exactly like them. If you are a Christian, you can be like them. So what's the answer? The answer is ironically that I think we need to get together. It's kind of maybe a little bit unexpected. Oh, to not be like the people of Babel, we've got to make sure we're spread out all the time. No, I think we actually need to come together. We need to gather so that we can encourage one another to go out and be scattered. You know, what propels me? What's the impetus, the impulse that sends me out on Monday through to Saturday? The motivation, the momentum that I get to go out and to do what God's called me to do. It actually doesn't come just from Sunday. It comes from whenever I'm around any one of you. When I spend time with you. When I spend time with Jay. We went and watched a movie on Friday. You know, that's the way we roll. We build team together. We watch a movie and we spend time and then I go, you know what? Jay's been encouraging me. I'm going to go talk to people. I had a poker game on Friday night at Cedric's house with some of the guys in church. Awesome. It was so awesome. I won. And it was great. But hanging out together, then like spending time with those guys and then being propelled out from there when I have my barbecue, where, once again, open invitation to anyone who wants to come. When I have my barbecue Tuesday nights, we get together. And then what's the motivation for the next day? I spent time with my brothers and sisters. And now I can go out and do what God's called me to do. Coming together on a Sunday, of course. Life groups. When we come together, we need to gather so that we can encourage each other to go back out into the mission that God has for us. So as a church, I mentioned this last Sunday on Vision Sunday. As a church, we have a vision to decentralize. What you see here at the moment is sort of a concession to the fact that we are spread out all across one of the most low density cities in the world. We're spread so far out. But we meet together on a Sunday because you know we need to meet. But we're meeting together with a vision and a hope and a prayer that we will have hubs of authentic, deep, real community all across the city. As a church, we have a vision to decentralize, to scatter this group right here, to scatter this group like seeds sown in a field. And Melbourne is a fertile plot of land. To scatter this group like seeds sown in a field that will grow and bear fruit. Genesis chapter 11 isn't really, the Tower of Babel isn't really about unity, it's about rebellion. It's about rejecting the mission of God. And we can be a people unlike them. We can undo that rebellion because of what Jesus has done for us. He's given us His Spirit to empower us to fulfill the very mission of God He has for us. To represent Him and to make His name great amongst the nations of the world. And we get to do it right here in Melbourne. Wow. What a privilege. What a joy. And I get to do it with you. What a joy. I love doing this with you. Especially when I win games of poker. So, Pastor Jay.
Wow. I don't know. I'm sitting there with goosebumps. You're a great teacher. Let me test that cultural diversity thing for you. As I'm sitting there, I came across 1 Peter 2:4-9. You know, Jesus always did analogies. He always drew analogies, didn't he? Always drew analogies. And we believe, as with Pastor Ken is teaching us in the 215, for those who are doing the 215, that the Bible is an overarching story. There's a whole story that we run every scripture through. And we're teaching this for a good reason, is that the rebellion is the cause of all of the issues in the world. Political issues, economical issues, wars that go on, relational issues, down to the issues that are in your own family. It's caused by this problem of rebellion against God. You're having these problems because you're not following the two laws. Love God with all of your heart, with all of your might, with all of your soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's nowhere in there where it says serve yourself. So let me paint this picture for you of what happened. The stones that they're building with is conformity. The tar is lawlessness. The tar is, I will conform to whatever my human person is telling me to build. I'm going to build this tower. I'm going to conform to that. I'm not going to go and live and be an individual that's unified to God. My individuality doesn't count. I need to conform. And the tar that holds that all together is lawlessness. It's take for me, and it's not care about my neighbor. That's the tar that sticks that together. So now that you've got that picture of what they were building with, let me give you the picture of what Jesus builds the house of God with, and who you are in that picture. 1 Peter. I'm going to talk about there's unity in diversity, individuality, in our cultural differences, bringing us together and building us together. It's okay to be individual. We quite often say, less of me, God, and more of you. And He said, no, here's what it is. Be yourself, but submit that will to God. And you will be more of yourself than you've ever been before. But with Him in submission to Him. 1 Peter 2:4. This is so exciting, Ken. I'm sorry, this excites me. If you get this, if you get this, it'll change your life. As you come to Him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to Him. You also, like living stones aren't like bricks. They're out of shape, aren't they? They're out of shape. They all don't look the same. The Tower of Babel, they're building with stones. Everyone looks the same. They're building with bricks. Everyone looks the same. But God builds His house with living stones. They're all different. And the water, He builds it with water, purity, obedience, doesn't He? You also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, "See, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in Him will never be put to shame." Now to you who believe, this stone is precious, but to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, and a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness and into this wonderful light. If you choose to be who you are in obedience to the cornerstone, it will never fall down. It will never fall down. Be you. Be an individual in your culture and who you are in your diversity. But submit who you are, your will, to Him. Go and be a builder in the world submitted to Him. Be a person in business, be a person in economics, be a person in education, be a person, whoever that is, be that individual fully submitted to God, and He will build His kingdom in that place through you. And it won't fall down no matter what goes on, because He, Jesus, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, is the cornerstone. He is the one who upholds this building. The mortar that holds us together are the first two commandments, which were our vision. Love God with all of your heart, with all of your mouth, and with all of your soul. And love your neighbor as you love yourself. And they're the things that will hold us together. So Pastor Ken, thank you for your message. I just want to pray for us as we go to close up. And then we're going to do our AGM. Father, I thank you so much for your word. I thank you so much for your written word, the Bible. I thank you for the grace that is on Ken's life. I thank you for the gift that you've given each of us, whatever that is. I pray that that starts to fare more into flame for your glory, Father. I pray that we become a church which is built out of living stones, built on the cornerstone of who you are, and follows those two commandments of loving you with all that we are and loving our neighbors as we love ourselves, and in serving you in obedience and love for you and for others, even at cost to ourselves. And we thank you so much for that. We thank you that you are a kind, loving, good God. We thank you that you are good. We thank you that we serve you because you are good. We thank you that we can be obedient because you are the only one who gave your life for me. You are the only one who gave His life for me. Nobody else do I owe my obedience to but you. And we thank you for that. We thank you. We thank you. We thank you. We thank you that you are good. And because you are good, I can say yes to you all day long. All day long, no matter what goes on, because you are the bedrock and steady and firm. And therefore, I will never be shaken no matter what goes on, because you are good. In Jesus' name, amen.